Okay, the time being 6:30, I would like to declare this meeting open and as always begin with our opening statement. Council acknowledges that we meet on the traditional lands and waters of the Paramount Kaurna people. They are custodians of this ancient and beautiful land, and so we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. We will care for this country together by ensuring the decisions we make will be guided by the principle we should never decrease our children's ability to live on this land. We do have one apology, that being Councillor Parkin. We have two approved leave of absences for tonight's meeting, one being Mayor Wisdom and the other being Councillor Gill. And we have a proposed leave of absence up on the board for Councillor Osterstock. Would someone like to move something in relation to that item? So Councillor Grant, you're happy to move.
As printed.
Councillor Cheetham, you're seconding. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. Moving on to the minutes of the previous meeting on the 23rd of April 2024. Would someone like to move something? As printed, Councillor Herman. Moved by Councillor Herman, seconded by Councillor Grant. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. So for tonight's meeting, do we have any declarations of conflict of interest? Yes, Councillor Pascali.
Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor, I have a conflict of interest with item 19.1 and 19.2.
Now, do you want to state the type of interest?
In general.
General conflict of interest. And just for record, the reasons, so it's pretty obvious.
Absolutely. I live in Woodford. I'll stay in the chamber to debate the items. Well, the first one I've got a question, and the second one I'll debate,
Sure.
But then I'll leave the chamber for the vote.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Scully. Any other conflicts of interest for tonight's meeting? No. So moving on to opening remarks, just three short points I'd like to make. One being the Give a Sheet initiative. Yes, sheet, I said, is on Saturday, the 25th of May. So we're really fortunate as a council to, and I know most of you are aware, but I think it's important to re-emphasize this. We're part of a trial in partnership with Green Industries, giving opportunity for not just residents within our council, but the surrounding areas to actually recycle their old sheets and towels, which will be turned into reusable materials, which is fantastic. So that'll be promoted by us to get as many people recycling as opposed to throwing that into landfill. I'm sure, yeah, I think it's a great initiative. Second being the resilience team. The CEO circulated an email earlier today. It was a fantastic result where they were presented with the Excellence in Emergency Management Disaster Recovery Award. And that's off the back of also winning the State and National Resilience Australia Awards, which I think highlights the incredible project, which has sort of evolved over time and become much bigger than maybe was originally anticipated, but providing some fantastic outcomes. And the third one, obviously, the Mayor Wisdom returning tomorrow. Look forward to welcoming her back and working with her for our community. So we'll move on to item seven. There are no questions adjourned or lying on the table. There are no petitions. There are no deputations. We do have a public forum. Anyone like to speak in the public forum? None. Okay, thank you. So moving on, we have two presentations tonight. The first being the mine operations plan regarding White Rock Quarry, where Ben Zammit, and who is the Executive Director of the Regulation and Compliance Division, along with Paul Dionne, sorry. Yeah, he's the Director of Minerals Regulation. So they've come to present up to us off the back of one of our previous motions. If you'd like to come forward, at the base of this mic, there's a little button that will highlight red, just so we can pick up the recording. You have 15 minutes and then 5 minutes for questions at the end. So thank you for coming along and presenting to us this evening.
Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate the opportunity to present to the council too. Look forward to any questions or comments that you may have about the White Rock Quarry and the assessment and the problem or legislation that it sits under. So my name is Paul Dionne. I'm the Director of Minerals Regulation within the Department for Energy and Mining. And my role is the lead regulator for the mineral resources sector for the state. So that includes the mines, quarries, and exploration activities that operate under the Mining Act and associated legislation. in this state.
Thanks, and I'm Ben Zamas, I'm the Executive Director of Research and Compliance. So the Minerals Petroleum and Hydrogen Renewable Energy Act sit under the remit of the team that I look after, and with Paul joining the key parts of that. So thanks for having us, and Paul sort of run through the presentation of the model, the plan. I've been corresponding over probably the last 12 months, I'd say, with regards to this operation. But, yeah, happy to be here presenting. Listen to any questions you've got.
Yeah, and acknowledge your acknowledgement of country, so we won't do that in full, but we equally acknowledge as guests here on Aboriginal land that we acknowledge everything that our department does impacts on Aboriginal country. So this is a couple of slides on how we regulate the department, how we regulate the industry, and then we've got a couple of slides that are focused on the questions that we've received through your correspondence. So as the lead regulator of the mineral resources sector in the department, in the state, we're responsible for the administration and management of the mineral resources sector and regulation of all activities associated with that. So an example of some of the activities that we delivered in the last 12 months is over 400 inspections, 114 assessments completed, 12 formal directions issued, 9 investigations into unauthorised activity. We've had 3 prosecutions in that time, which is as our act has matured over time, we've become more competent and mature in the compliance phase, and also a lot of correspondence that we issue regularly. So in a snapshot of what we do, we also spend a lot of time, our team in community meetings, engaging with community, attending company meetings with community through consultative committees and out in the field with landowners and other associated stakeholders. So our regulatory approach is widely available on our website, and we believe we operate with a leading practice mindset, and we do believe that we are benchmarked quite well when we compare with our regulators across the country. So we have a very strong national network with our co-regulators across the country, and we're on networking groups together. We speak all the time. We attend meetings. We compare notes and talk to each other about how the states can do things better. And our Mining Act, which was updated in January 2021, is now recognised as one of the more contemporary pieces of legislation going around in the country for mining, noting that the private mine section, which we'll talk about today, is something of more historical nature. But we do believe we are in a position to deliver moving forward a leading practice regime for the sector and the state. With that said, we do have a strong co-regulatory relationship for mining and exploration and quarrying in the state. We don't regulate it on our own. We regulate it with our co-regulators, such as the EPA, the Department for Energy and Water and Associated Boards, SafeWork SA, and the Commonwealth jurisdictions for mining. We regularly meet and engage, and we have MOUs and a lot of regular correspondence with the other agencies. We do try to maintain a one-window government approach with our assessment compliance processes, but we always meet the requirements of other agencies, engage other agencies, joint inspections, assessment processes are all done collaboratively. So that's just a little snapshot, that slide of how it all works. Numerous pieces of legislation, as you can see there. And then private mines, the nuance in the Mining Act. So the private mines is what makes up the White Rock Quarry. So when the Mining Act commenced in 1971, ownership of the state's minerals became vested in the Crown. So in recognition of this significant change, the Mining Act introduced a process for people who had lost their mineral rights to apply for a limited time only after the commencement of the Mining Act back in 1971 to keep these rights under certain circumstances. And at that time, if their application was successful, the governor proclaimed the area to be a private mine, which, as you can see on that map, is the White Rock Quarry and the Stonyfield Quarry are two examples of this. And then these private wines are recognised as a tenement to this day, as of the January 2021 Mining Act amendments. Private wines are now recognised as a tenement under the Mining Act, but remain distinct from other tenements and are regulated under their own framework set out in the Mining Act. So the granting of a private mine in 1971 is no different, really, in theory, to granting tenure under a standard tenement under the mining lease process under the Mining Act today. So we are bound by our legislation. We can only work within our legislation. And due to the historic nature, there are specific legislative requirements regarding these types of operations. But it's important to clarify that the differences today in this modern time with an updated Mining Act have changed quite a lot over time and are largely related to elements of process and tenure. So mineral rights, the exemptions for certain things, there's no renewal process, there's no expiry process, there's different associated administrative processes. But the most important thing for many of the community is that the majority of the environmental and regulatory requirements for a mine now align with the contemporary standards which apply to all other tenements that are regulated under the Mining Act. And these were further strengthened in January 2021. And some examples that have changed since January 21 was the standards that government applies to the management of specific environmental aspects. And this includes the fundamental environmental impact process that sits within the Mining Act applies equally to private mines and the associated programs, known as the Mine Operations Plan or a Program for Environment Protection and Rehabilitation, which is the equivalent document for all other tenure granted under the Mining Act. So it's very important that that is recognised. So this applies for any standard contemporary development approach in 2024. There's no difference. Other changes that have aligned is there's now a requirement for evidence of community engagement as part of the impact assessment process. So the White Rock Quarry example is required to demonstrate evidence of community engagement as part of its process and how that has impacted, how the impact assessment process has recognised that. And the broad alignment of the definition of environment under the Mining Act. So previously these were quite different, but now they're very much aligned, with the differences being more related to process and tenure, which is something that is established since 1971. Other factors that have changed are the requirement for public transparency. So compliance reporting is now a requirement under the Mining Act for private mines. So annual compliance reports, and also the broader transparency principles. So all mine operations plans and compliance reports are now public for all MOPs or mine operation plans and for MOPs after January 2021, which would apply to the White Rock Quarry. And also the offences and penalties under the Mining Act are now aligned for both private mines and other tenure under the Mining Act. The other change that came in 21 is there's a time frame for mine's operations plans to be standalone from the broader program for environment protection and rehabilitation with a 15-year transition period from January 21. So this is due to expire January 2036, which would then convert all mine operations plans will be equivalent to a PEPA. So we expect that possibly could come sooner, but we can't predict the future. That's what the transitional provisions under the regs say now. So it's important to note that all of the current metropolitan quarries of significance have private mines attached to them because they've all been around for a long time. There's no new private mine within the metro of Adelaide that doesn't have a private mine attached to it. All of these quarries are significant resources to the state and strategic resources for the state, and do provide a benefit to the state, which is stands out from other cities such as Sydney, where our access to construction materials being so close to areas where it's required really does make our construction costs quite competitive when compared to other jurisdictions. So that's a bit of an overview of the private mine legislation. Then with regards to the assessment of a mine operations plan, it is a robust assessment process. All, as I've previously said, all mine operations on private mines must complete an environmental impact assessment and manage the impact of mining operations by setting objectives and criteria through a mine operations plan. That's the lean framework. That process must include evidence of community consultation and how issues have raised by the community have been considered in the assessment of impacts and the development of objectives that sit within the plans. Once submitted, a MOP will be subject to the government assessment process, which is subject matter experts and specialists across our department, EPA, Environment and Water, Safe Work SA, number of similar departments, and other expert scientists and technical people from third parties and independent where required. This review, this impact assessment, once submitted, will be is reviewed, and from that, a set of environmental objectives and that whether they can be appropriately achieved is very important and something that we take to the highest level of detail. The expected level of impact to the environment must be appropriate considering the control and management strategies described.
Yeah, about 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you. And any proposed control and management strategies are likely to achieve any objective. So, for example, we would refer to the EPA for any air quality standards that leading practice air quality standards that would be required to be met by a quarry such as White Rock. At the conclusion of the assessment, a recommendation is prepared detailing whether the MOP can be approved or if any further alterations are required by the company. It's important to know we can't refuse a MOP, but we can continuously require further alterations because the tenure has already been granted. This is a nature of the private mine. But this delegation sits with the Director of Mines, noting that was in your correspondence, the Minister. The Director of Mines is the delegate for the approval or otherwise of the MOP, which is our CEO or LSA. Noting though that we do engage with our minister on all aspects of any assessment or approval of significance, we would engage with our minister. That's part of our process, and that is the case for this quarter year. Just to clarify the transparency provisions. All MOPs approved after January 21 are publicly available, and all their annual reporting requirements must be delivered through a public process. And then just the final slide on the process to date for the White Rock Quarry. So as you can see, it's been 4 years since December 2020 when it was submitted. We're going through a process of requiring additional alterations. The company are off doing their bit after the department provides the feedback. This is a reflection of the community's input to the process as well. Like all this is on our website and the company's website. The community's interests have all been represented, and we're ensuring that's all covered off as part of the assessment. At the end of this process, a recommendation will be made to the Director of Mines on the decision whether or not to approve them all. We're not there yet. We've got our last submission on the 18th of April. This will be live on our website. Everything's live on our website, so we'll be putting this up within days after tonight's meeting. You'll see that on there. And in regards to future engagement and future, it's our expectation that community engagement remains ongoing and that all mine operation plans and any other approval under the Mining Act must have a community engagement plan attached to it. And the company must report annually and demonstrate that that's being met. We encourage the community to continue to engage with the company and the department should that be of interest. And if any further issues are identified down the road, then can request a review of the plan at any point in time. So that concludes our update. And we have to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just one quick question for myself. With the timeline of events that you showed, there's a significant period of time which I guess it took to review the original MOP that was submitted. Now, with the revised MOP, do you anticipate it would again take the same amount of time, or is it because there's less that's new, you would assess it in a shorter time period?
We expect it to be less. The impact assessment process has been, a lot of that work was done early.
Yeah.
There was discrepancy about the scale of the project. That's been revised now to an appropriate, or what we consider to be appropriate size project. So a lot of that. So yes, we do expect it to be
a lot less. Do you have any idea on the rep today?
We're expecting to be in a position within 2 months of that April date to make a decision.
Thank you. Do any elected members have questions? Councillor Hammond and Councillor Grant. Yeah, we'll go around the table. For the start, Councillor Hammond. We'll just start with one because we've got four others.
All right, so I'll be quick. Borrell of Blackpool, is that a 5 at 9 or is it a new one?
It's a private one.
Right.
Pretty sure it is, yeah.
Okay, thank you. And the other one? Where in the process, I didn't see it clearly spelled out, is there consultation with the Aboriginal people?
The private mine legislation, the land is extinguished from native title as the tenement was granted in 1971, but they have been required to demonstrate engagement with the Aboriginal community in the MOC, and that is outlined in the document.
Thank you. Thanks. Councillor Grant.
Yeah, thank you, Your Worship. Thanks for the presentation. I don't know if you can answer this question, but you might be able to answer it in principle. There's a public forum in Burnside a number of years ago, and a lot of the community were concerned about dust levels. And EPA was doing monitoring of dust levels, but the data was not publicly available. And you spoke about the need for transparency. Is that something the MOC can or has required to be made public? Because obviously that would address, or may well address, community concerns, but the lack of transparency there was a considerable issue. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, happy to. So that's a good question. And yes, the MOC does provide all the transparency about the air quality criteria and the monitoring. They have a 24/7 monitor running on that site now. All that data is publicly available. So they basically put it into our legislation.
Thank you. Councillor Pascal.
Thank you, and through you, Acting Mayor. Thanks for the presentation, and thanks for your question, Councillor Brown, because that is one of the concerns that Turingi residents have raised with me. I was actually wanting to know more detail around what does the community engagement actively looks like with residents, because I've got residents in Turingi who are still in the dark about a lot of what's going on there.
So community engagement has to be proportionate to the issue at hand. So we would expect to see significant community engagement with the communities directly affected by the project. So if that had not occurred, then that would be a concern for us.
What does it look like?
So numerous meetings, the community issue surveys, newsletters to community. There were numerous presentations to the Creek group that were formed that was ongoing for some time about their concerns about sediment discharge. Regular meetings as required. The meeting with at residents' homes, there'd be broader community meetings and letterbox drops. And there's numerous ways for companies to engage with the community. And that's something we'll expect to see throughout the process.
Thank you. Councillor Lunch.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Thank you for your presentation tonight. You mentioned in your presentation that you can't refuse a mine because of something to do with the fact that it was a private mine. How do you actually then, what sort of leverage do you have to actually go back and actually say this is not good enough if you're not able to actually refuse it?
So we do have the power to require alterations.
Right.
So they already have a mine. They're an operating concern. They can't expand or do anything outside of the scope of their current operation without a new program. So we do hold that authority there to either request alterations or approve. We don't have the authority to refuse because it's not tenured.
Okay, so they've got one, they're just trying to change it, basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Just quickly, another one. I don't know if you know, there's an unmade road that's the centre of the mine site, which belongs to council. If council didn't permit them to purchase that or go through the process to purchase that, would that affect your ability to approve the operation?
Yeah, so that road reserve is not considered in the MOC, it's excluded from the mine operations. they've excluded that area. That's a matter for council and the company to resolve. Should they wish to mine or conduct mining operations on that road reserve, they would need tenure over that, which would not be a private mine. They'd have to apply under the Mining Act for a mining lease under contemporary processes.
Thank you. Councillor Selwood, final question.
Thank you, and through you, Acting Mayor. It was my understanding that the previous version of the mine operation plan that had been submitted included some area within a conservation area, and I'm just wondering if that new revised one does extend the mining operation into any conservation area.
Yeah, so they have committed to not mine Mount Sky, which was the area that was under the concern from the committee, so there was a significant reduction in scope since that first MOP was submitted, so that area is now not considered in the MOP.
Thank you again for coming along to present tonight. It's good to hear some changes and alterations being made based on that feedback from the community. So we look forward to seeing the MOP within days.
Yeah.
If we have a look over that.
So yeah, no, have a look. Yeah, we make sure it's. Thank you for it. Appreciate it.
Thank you again.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, so we'll move on to item 9.2. We have a second presentation by Adelaide Hills Tourism. We have Executive Officer Ms. Anya Jarman here to present to us tonight. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Happy
you again. Good to be back. Some presentation coming up. Okay. And apologies on behalf of our Deputy Chair. We had a bit of a mix up sometimes, but he's across the presentation, and I'm obviously going to take any questions as well for him on notice. So it's my absolute delight to come and present to you. Again, I can't believe, I think it's been about 10 months since I was last in here, and the region's performing brilliantly. So I'm going to give you an overview of all of our activities over the last year, give you a bit of a sense on where tourism is going, I guess on a state basis, and in a post-COVID environment, we're still not seeing perfect patterns, because obviously the world's changed and people's travel behaviours have changed. So moving on, I just wanted to recap what our role is here, which is to build a resilient and sustainable industry that capitalises on its proximity to Adelaide by aiming to convert more visitors to stay overnight. And I can't emphasise enough the importance of when someone does stay overnight in region, expenditure does increase significantly. We obviously want day trippers to linger longer and spend more money, and growing repeat visitation is extremely important. And we're very conscious of the power of visiting friends and relatives. So as Adelaide Hills locals, when you have people come and stay either from intrastate, so people outside our region, interstate or international, when you show them what's going on in the region, there's a lovely expenditure increase that goes in. I just want to touch again on our strategic planning framework. I'm very much across the fact that you're going as a council through your new strategic planning phase. So obviously everything we do as we move forward in our plan beyond 2025 is very much considerate of our funding partners and where they're going. Thankfully, a lot of our strategic pillars all align. However, we stem down from the South Australian Visitor Economy Sector Plan, and that goes to a regional visitor strategy level and also links in nicely with our regional strategic tourism plan. So we have very clear targets that are all measurable right at a top sort of government level. And we also make sure that we're in your visitor economy space within your economic development plans as well. Just wanted to touch on the Adelaide Hills Tourism Board again. We were delighted to, Greg joined us for our first meeting only a couple of weeks ago. We meet every 2 months throughout the year, and we've really tried to get a cross-section of the tourism industry and major funding partners on that board. So we have a lovely mix of the wine region, Department of Environment and Water, the wellness sector, we've got distillers, we've got also agritourism, which is very important for our region, RDA, and we're a very small, very efficient team. Essentially, I'm full-time and I'm supported by a couple of contractors as well. So we have the equivalent of about 1.4 headcounts, and that's how we deliver all of our activities for the region. Our chair has just stepped down, Martin Radcliffe, and James Sellers is, who obviously couldn't be here tonight, he's our acting chair, and we're about to recruit for a new chair, so watch this space in the next week or so. And that recruitment process also involves our major funding partners as well. Just wanted to touch on the South Australian visitor economy. It continues to grow. We did go through a recovery stage. We have seen a softening in the last quarter of last year, and that was to be expected. I think one thing that we were very conscious of is as people came out of the pandemic, and whilst it's still a long, you know, we've had quite a good break since that pandemic, people's travel behaviours changed significantly. So what we saw is immediately after people travelled very strongly within our own state. So from an intrastate perspective, we did very well as a region. People couldn't get out of the state. Then when they could get out of the state, they travelled interstate because they could move. And we always knew that when the international borders open, then things would begin to get quite interesting because where people could get out of Australia, they would. And where people relied on people coming internally and travelling domestically, it was about getting that balance right. So there's a bit of a balancing going on. There was a levelling in the last quarter, but we're growing again. And I'd say you will see that growth will continue, particularly in our region. So I'm really happy to report to Council that we're actually 20% over our 2025 expenditure targets for the region. Our target was 245 million. We're now sitting at $293 million from expenditure. We've seen a huge boost in day trips. Again, that's great, but we would love people to stay overnight because that's where expenditure really happens. And we continue to get really strong new product, which I'll touch on in a moment. But there's 1,100 direct jobs in the region that come from tourism, 300 indirect. And we've got over 900 tourism businesses as well. So there's a lot that happens in these two council areas. Just wanted to touch on that visitor profile. I should say most of the data we get is always a quarter afterwards. It's actually derived from the regional visitor survey, which is done out of Canberra. We have that red, we've seen that softening from an interstate perspective, which I've obviously explained before, but you'll see international. Last year we were at 4,000 and we're already up at 16,000. So as those aviation loads begin to come in, things begin to grow. And also we're up quite high in day trips as well. And those four priorities, which I touched on before, are obviously all stemming from the state tourism plan. Given our resources and the time I spend, I sit quite equally across all of these areas. I would say that experience, supply development and our capability is fundamental for the region. If our operators know how to sell themselves, how to get themselves online bookable and how to leverage all the platforms available to them, then they'll automatically get the benefits of any marketing that's done by either us or any other organisation, and I'll touch on that a little bit later. So southaustralia.com is the state tourism website. That obviously covers the whole state, so is a little bit more in the macro space. We have visitadelaidehills.com.au, and that actually means that we have much richer product, so we can tell the stories of the hills that are a lot more specific to us. Where our average time on site's really good. To have nearly 2 minutes on site for a website's actually really, really good stats in terms of industry benchmarking. And we're also going to rebrand our site in July to reflect the new brand work that I shared with Council last year. I really want to touch on our social media. So when it comes to consumer direct marketing, which by way of nature is a very, very expensive process, once you start buying ads, creating marketing campaigns, it costs a lot of money and it's very hard to measure conversion. So what we do is we use our website and our social media platforms almost as a brand builder, but we measure our clicks. So we know that anyone who comes on our site, when they click, we'll direct them onto our website, which means we know that people have got an opportunity to book. And we're also handing leads over to our industry. So we can say to an operator, we gave you 3,000 leads last year, and that's really, really important. Then it's obviously up to the operator's website to leverage the fact that we're feeding leads to them. I just wanted to touch on a couple of our successful reels. We don't actually curate these. We slice and dice them, but we don't go out to an agency and brief in for them to create a beautiful ad because that costs an absolute fortune. What we find is really effective is using already existing content and then sharing other people's content, and then people are more likely to share it because it feels more organic and essentially more real. And I wanted to touch on this one because this little fella keeps coming up, this Botteroo. It's been around for quite a while. But our average Instagram post reaches about 28,000 users and it gets about 700 or 800 engagements. So that's essentially people that click it, like it, share it with a friend. You see people tagging each other's names at the bottom. But this particular one absolutely went crazy. We had 8,000 interactions. It's been viewed over 2,500 times. It's actually been saved by 439 people, and it just keeps going. So it's a Potteroo in Cleveland eating strawberries, and it went absolutely crazy. So this is all tagged as well. We can actually see who's looking at this from all around the world. So Potteroo, a little one there. And we also really try to celebrate the sea world.
Walking in a winter wonderland. Y'all know me.
Let's try and stop them there. The last one was the Stirling one, which we've just recently shared, and that's probably been one of our most successful posts in the last 3 months. So we really anchor into the seasons of the hills because it's something that makes us unique, more unique than any other region in South Australia. So you'll see things go crazy on socials just about 2 weeks before the seasons change. Obviously, when the leaves change, it makes a big difference. Visit a guide and map. So we print about 70,000 of these each year. We don't fund this. This is done by a publishing house, but I do check the content before it goes out into the world of consumers just to make sure that things that are closed aren't reflected in the guide. And there are new products are reflected, or any new change or tone of voice is reflected really well. And I also make sure that the images are fresh and up to date, and you're quite encouraging. We go through those in the last probably 2 years. We've gone through more guides than we've ever gone through before. And in the last 3 months, I think we've gone through about 3,500 maps. So we just print an A3 map with a QR code so people can click in and see it online if they want. And they're just a tear-off map. They're here in the library. They're, all around the place. We tend to go through them because everyone likes a good map. So it's a good investment.
Maybe under 5 minutes.
That's right, we'll be done. The other thing, experience development, this is the really important thing for me. And I think what's been lovely in the last 3 years, because I've been sort of a constant support for the industry, people reach out all the time. So the moment they're about to launch something or they're nearly finished, they'll call me. And I'll come out and teach them how to get online. I'll ensure their images are up to date. I'll get them on a tourism warehouse platform that's really important. It actually distributes to over 200 websites for booking so that when they do launch, they're successful. And these are just a couple of the products that have just launched literally in the last 3 weeks in the region. We've got one there at Carey Gully, the Gladys, also the Old Pipes Brewery. They've converted the front section into beautiful B&Bs. And up here, Nurilla House, Carriage House, you're probably aware of it. That launched about just over a year ago. It's the most beautiful accommodation. And I go from the north of the region all the way to the south. So that's the Kensington View. I spend a lot of time up in Gumaraka as well. So I ensure I cover the whole area of the hills. And you'll see that what we offer is there's a whole range of prices and accommodation styles. I wanted to touch on Ondine, which is a relatively new product. Kane Pollard, who's a Gumaraka local, he runs the Tofu restaurant in Tea Tree Gully, even though we'd like to claim him as our own in the hills. He is a local, and he's just gone into partnership with Rose Kentish and Deb and taken over the Maximilian site in Verdun. Kane, I think, is a wonderful advocate of the Adelaide Hills. He's local. He grew up in Uraidla. He's all about sustainable cooking, sustainable sourcing of food, low food miles. And so he also launched a product which I work really closely with him on called Place, where he takes dining to places that you could otherwise not actually dine in. So I just wanted to show you an example of what he's just launched. And he started in the hills in a forest.
Always been a special place. A place of wonder. A place of creativity. Connection with the land and environment. Sense of that I need is practically the fire. Seems to bring me back down to earth. the joy of sharing time with others in the space. Oops. We remember the feeling of warm spring sunshine, fading through the canopy after a long, cold winter as a child, sitting on top of the quartz boulder with my brother, Pierre and his. We felt invisible and ready to take on the world. I heard place give you a glimpse into why I love the forest so strongly.
So Kane has also gone on to, he's a Tasting Australia ambassador this year, and I think he represents everything that's so fabulous about the hills, just really looking after the environment, sustainability, and it's certainly something that, you know, places like Tourism Australia have identified. Sustainable, rich, provenance-based products are very, very important. Just quickly on accommodation, we've probably got 1 minute to go. Quickly on accommodation, very conscious, a lot of the reporting around accommodation that happens is on a macro level. So they use the insights teams at SATC use data called STR data, which only captures hotels over 10 rooms. So when you hear people reporting on occupancy in the Adelaide Hills, it only really gives us 50% of the picture. So we are looking at ways in which we can gather data through. There's some great platforms which we're discussing at a board level about. But we can't deny the fact that small boutique accommodation, Airbnbs, is fundamental to the tourism industry in the hills as well. So this is based on the split I did last year on desktop research. And it's quite interesting because it's very much split across both council areas as well. Finally, going global, I'm working with a lot of operators to try and make sure that we actually have a global awareness. Next week, I don't take them physically, I'm representing a few operators from the Adelaide Hills at the Australian Tourism Exchange. This means that people, essentially, if you were to go into a travel agent and pick up a brochure, we want as many of our products in the hills packaged globally, which means that more international visitors come here. And the great thing is, because of the quality product we've got, it'll be small scale and high spend, which works really, really well for the hills. So that's a big focus for me, is really trying to move some of our operators into that global space rather than just relying on local. I won't touch on the others because I'm running out of time. And also we hosted the Australian Tourism Export Council meeting place, which was all the buyers from around Australia who sell international travel to the world. We managed to secure the whole conference up in the hills for a full day, and they moved all around. They experienced 5 products as part of their offering. And stakeholder engagement is obviously critical for us. We do an event each year. We'll do another one in October this year to introduce the new chair to the region. I spend probably 60 to 70% of my time on the road with operators, helping them and sort of re-engaging with them on how the industry works. I deal with SATC almost daily, and I have formal meetings with them every 2 weeks. So it really is a collaborative effort across the whole region. I won't move. Would you like me to stop there? Are we ahead of time? Or?
Yeah, we can stop there, and okay. Councillors can read through that while we have some questions.
Okay.
If they don't, we can call it all. Councillor Sill, we'll start with Sill.
I've got two.
More money to have in your hands.
My first question is around occupancy. So now I've been talking to a number of B&Bs in Woodside, Liverpool and Birdwood, and they've been telling me that as more B&Bs are coming online, their occupancy rates are dramatically dropping.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really worried about the ability to maintain their businesses. I'm just wondering what Adelaide Tourism's role is in ensuring that the existing operators are able to stay successful while also sort of managing the sector.
So I guess with that, what I would actually ask is if there are any operators, please refer them to me, because I can make sure that their booking platforms are where they're not just relying on Airbnb, but they're using every platform possible. And that's what I would actually go into an operator and make sure their Australian Tourism data warehouse listing is up to date. But I'd also encourage them to refresh how they're actually offered in the industry in terms of their imagery, to tag us on socials. We can actually do it. Sometimes we'll do a social post and people will see bookings within 2 or 3 days. So that's where having that industry liaison point. If you do get feedback like that from locals, please send them through to me because I can sit and talk them through. The challenge for us as well, and this is what we're going to look at as a board, is without the data about Airbnbs, it's very hard to understand where occupancy is. But we will know that if we can invest in another data research platform. And a lot of the banks have got some great platforms now where you can actually see exactly where people spend their money, whether it's in retail or accommodation, and that picks up on Airbnb. So I'd be really keen to speak to those operators. So please, if ever you get inquiries like that, just send them through and I'll sit down with them and have a cup of tea and talk through everything. So
And my second question is just about, there's a lot of community groups, Hello Mount Torrens or Imagine Your Ailer both come to mind. And there's groups that are doing a lot of work in terms of increasing amenity in their area and really place making.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering what your interaction is with those groups and how you're supporting them.
So the Mount Torrens one, the moment I saw that come up, I actually reached out to them. I haven't heard back from them yet, but I did actually reach out saying, please get in touch. I'm happy to come and speak to your group, talk to you how the industry works. Imagine Your Ailer, I have worked with them and I've actually presented it at one of their forums before with the community and told them how the industry works as well. So the more that people actually pull together like this, I think the better as a collective, more than one. I think things get challenging when everyone's trying to do the same thing. So I'm very much, please reach out and I'll sit down with the community and talk in this situation and give people advice on what to do and how to get more well done. So.
Councillor Hannon.
Yes, thank you for your presentation. My question relates to your role in regard to the Stirling. Woolworths burned out and we've had presentations from the Stirling business district people, less traffic through the shops, etc. They experienced a hard time. So what's the relationship? How do you work together there?
Actually, when I did actually reach out at a board level around that time with Stirling, so we've done quite a bit of extra work around pushing across social platforms. In fact, that Stirling post was one of them. In fact, one has came out about a couple of hours ago as well. So if we find that there are certain areas that are struggling, we do try and get a lot of more consumer messaging out. I will say what's fundamentally important for a resident is having refreshed product. Is actually giving people reasons to come through a town and to visit the village. So we actually go, we push the markets really hard in Stirling as well, because that's a reason for people to come through. We push the seasons very much so. What we are going to do is we're trying to get in Harndorf at the moment, is doing a series of ambassadors, which we'd like to roll out into Stirling if we can get this off the ground in Harndorf. But I guess to be really sort of transparent, we have to give people new reasons to visit. So that's when I'm really hungry for information. So with any business associations from any town, I love to get updates, because the more information I have, the more that I can push it out across our platforms. And I can also bring for Mills in, so I can bring trade and media for Mills through the SATC Media and Trade for Mills program.
Thank you.
Any final question? Thank you very much for coming on to present. Appreciate it. Okay, we'll move on to item 10, questions on notice. So first one being with regard to fabric arts and heritage. I am happy to accept any additional questions now if they're burning. Okay, we'll move on to item 10.2, country cabinet. The CEO is going to a verbal update in addition to the letters that were included in the agenda, just around a few different initiatives. So I'll pass over to you, CEO.
Thank you, and thank you for the question. Just to provide you a little bit of a summary of what we've been working on. One key project is fire mitigation across the region, including Mount Barker, and we're working with a tech company around artificial intelligence and high-tech cameras to build up a bit of a business case to go back to state government. So watch this space. It's in its infancy at the moment, but we are working on that. They have similar scenarios, this type of tech protecting assets. This is agricultural assets over on the eastern board. But we're looking at applying it uniquely to the Adelaide Hills ranges. So yeah, I'll be reporting back to you on that. Of course, as you'd appreciate, we've had some success with Amy Gillett, and that's a project which, as you'd appreciate, has been quite a sensitive one for a number of years. There's been some success, of course, in some of our stormwater issues, one being Junction Road in Balhanna. So that's an ongoing conversation and also in principle support for funding by the relevant minister. And of course, we've had some success, and we'll report back to you on this, around potential funding for master planning, in particular in our Central Hills district. And I'll provide more information as that comes to hand as well. Some of the other projects, regional plan, that's ongoing. We're still lobbying the state government and relevant departments to get our own unique regional plan. So we will need to report back to you at some point on that as well. So I better just give you a very brief overview that, yes, things have been progressing, and by all means, at some point in the future, we'll be conducting a workshop or an information briefing and a formal report, and providing a more detailed and clearly articulated response.
Yes, Councillor Herman.
Could that information be given people be incorporated in the minutes?
We could include it as some dot points, perhaps even to sit under the CEO of the report. Yeah. Or
somewhere just in the minutes so we can pick up that. Thank you.
Okay, moving on to item 10.3. Does anyone have any additional questions in relation to that?
Thank you, and through you, you know, I'll take your advice on this. Mm-hmm. I would like to ask some additional questions in relation to the response that we got, but believe that we should do it in confidence because of the response that stated confidentiality around what the reasons.
Sure, so we can consider that under section 19 towards the end of the meeting.
Thank you.
So we'll address that then. Okay, moving on to item 11. There are no motions on notice, so we'll move into the administrative reports. The first one being the AVP draft for consultation. And Mr. Lewis, do you have any additional information you'd like to provide to the chamber to help with this and organise it?
Thank you, Chair. If I can briefly introduce the report and give a small update.
Sure.
So obviously we're presenting the draft budget and any business plan consultation. There's been a lot of work done on this based on the consultation and feedback from yourselves, which has been foundational to delivering this budget. We believe it does actually cover all the requirements at this point in time. To get there, we have done aggressive cost cutting to get to a point where we can deliver a surplus budget, a draft budget. But you know, this budget does actually include all the major projects, only Media Works, the CRM project, and the Woodside Pool. We put two options in there. There was one recommendation, but there are two options. And for option two, we just want to highlight that the average residential rate rise associated with option two is 6.42%. This was inadvertently in some places put as 6.24. as well as 6.42, but it is the higher figure, 6.42%. We'll amend the report if required later on. The recommended option of a surplus of $365,000, that figure was based on a bit of brainstorming to ensure that there was a number of projects which were being considered or still possible out there. And we wanted to make sure that you could have a surplus level which would give you a comfort, or would give you room to maneuver over the year, both to include new projects, to support the new strategic plan, and still have a realistic chance of coming in with a surplus. The second option was focused very much on delivering 1% surplus, which is your target, the bottom end of your target ratio. The other bit of information which I've been asked to provide is the average dollar rate rise we associated with option one and two. In option one, it's $142. The idea of an average household with an average residential property, that bill will go up $142, whereas in option two, that's a little bit higher, at $158. That's all the information I have, but obviously we're here to take questions.
Thank you. I see someone would like to move something in relation to this item. Mm-hmm. Councillor Herman, would you like to move something?
Yes.
What would you like to move?
Mm-hmm. I'll just move the one, as it's two A, to change the operating surplus to the figure in the report, which we just don't have, only $654,000.
So are you wanting to move the alternate recommendation?
Yeah.
So that would be right. The other one that was in the report. So is that what you'd like to do?
Yes. It's often to Mr. Lewis has talked about, which is the higher 6.42%. It's given an operating surplus of 654. It meets the adopted range of our operating surplus ratio of 1%, just scrapes in the next two are not affected by that. So move that and I'll speak to it.
Yeah, you can see to it now.
Right. Well, on page 86, as Mr. Lewis has pointed out, gives the background to that report. Now, there are extenuating circumstances regarding this budget, but we've had three issues that one off. And a similar position rose in 2015-16, the Sandton Flat bushfires and flooding which occurred at the time. They were unplanned. The council at that time recovered the additional operating costs. Council added 1% to the rates as a one-off impost. That was a lump of expenditure and a lump of income in the 1 year. Following year, in 16-17, council removed the 1% from the base. This strategy was accepted by the community. A little skepticism at first, fearing that the 1% would not be removed in subsequent year. However, council members honoured that commitment. The additional 1% raised through the rates kept council's operating service within the approved range for 15-16. The operating surplus approved for this current budget is 1.5%, and the recommendation of most I put forward meets that very key sustainability ratio. Now, there is a question about, and I've had this in my own, question about whether the 1-5% is the right range. It's very, go to council, that figure varies between two. In fact, sometimes, I think at one time, even they voted as council for 0 to 5%. But I don't think that's an issue for discussion tonight. That if we're going to consider any variation of already established, we should keep that as a separate item and perhaps discuss that in the next month before we adopt the final budget for the year. So I see there is a choice between two. Either we sink into the deficit, even the deficit of the operating surplus ratio for the first time in living memory, and improve the rate rise of 5.78%. Or we maintain that operating surplus in the approved range of 1.5% to 5%. On balance, I believe the community would accept the lesser of the two evils. That is the increase of 6.54% on the proviso that the 25-26 rate base be reduced by a compensating amount. Now, I don't like going back in history, but the former director of corporate services argued to the chamber that their operating service in that range of 1 to 5% should have been at the upper end. Now, council didn't accept that as an argument. They kept it at the 1 or 2%. So it just gives the council, well, probably more so the CEO, some flexibility. For example, if we go for the 54,000 surplus, there could be two things that come to the council next year. One, Pycombe might be, or Pycombe Hub might be back, and we had agreed to that at one stage, subject to funding. If they got funding, immediately
we need to wrap it up.
And the other one is somewhere in the winds, we have the Mount Lofty Footy Club coming in, they want money. That surplus will just disappear and pull us down under the 1-4 into deficit.
Thank you. Just one point of clarification is when you talked about the 5.78, at one point you talked about it being a deficit, but it would still be a surplus, just a lot.
Yeah, sorry.
A lot. That'd be at 0.56%. Do we have a seconder for, so Councillor Grant, you'd like to second? Would you like to speak to the motion?
Yeah, thank you, Your Worship. I will. And thank you for staff for pulling this together. It's always a significant body of work. Yeah, I'll happily second Councillor Herman's motion and thank him for raising this. It would be very easy to go for the lower operating surplus, very, very easy. And myself was leaning towards that, but we're not here to make the easy decisions. We're here to make the right decisions. And in the past, in the cold, hard light of day, we adopted a target of 1% to 5% operating surplus because we thought that's the right thing. And that's not a target of 1%. It's a minimum of 1%. And I think we should hold true to that. Nobody likes making rate increases, but our obligation is, as I said, not to make the easy decisions, but the right one. And in these circumstances, ensuring the sustainability of this council is the right decision. And having a surplus below 1% is so close to zero, in the size of the budget, that it will very easily dip under. The slightest contingency that arises would have us in deficit, let alone a disaster such as a major wildfire or a major weather event. Or any other event, and we have to have that contingency there. So for that reason, I'd encourage members of this chamber to support this motion, support a sustainable level of income. And if people want to discuss our operating surplus ratio in the future, we should have that debate. But we had it in the past, and I think we should stay true to what we decided on that occasion. So I'd encourage people to support this motion.
Councillor Boyd?
Yes, through you, Acting Mayor. I also agree with the motion as put. It's only $16 more per household, and we're almost doubling our surplus. So I agree with both the councillors that have spoken before, and I think that this is worth endorsing.
Councillor Huxford and Councillor Settle.
I have a question.
Sure, that's fine.
And I am very sorry that I haven't asked this sooner. That's only just come to me. On page 9, I hope it's got a simple answer and it's just me being silly. But on page 9, it says a 6.24% increase with an operating surplus of 654,000. Is that a typo on page 9? Okay, all right, sorry. I'll stand down.
Councillor Selwood and Councillor Scully, then Councillor.
I've got a question first, and I'd like to speak. So Councillor Grant just mentioned that we need to be aware of potential for disasters and having a contingency there. It's my understanding that in the long-term financial plan, we already have that on top of this.
There's a contingency in relation to borrowings, but not the operating surplus. Yep. So we do have that second line. Yes, correct. Yep. You're showing we have capacity to borrow in response, but it's not so.
Great. Thank you. So I am not supportive of the motion as it's been put. I was supportive of the recommendation that was put by the administration. I really believe that showing surplus does show that we're either overtaxing or we're under delivering. And I think it's really important that we consider what we're putting out there in terms of services, but also how much we're charging our residents. Personally, I'm not shy of rate rises. I think rate rises are excellent, but then we need to demonstrate that we're delivering valuable services to our community for that those rate rises. I do understand that the target ratios are what they are, but I do think that's just a target. I'm not sure it's the right target. I wasn't here for that debate, but I do think, as Councillor Herman said, that is a debate for another day. You know, the LGA have advised that council budget should be sustainable over time, and I think that's a lot more important than year-on-year sustainability. And there are some operating expenses this year that are unusual and won't be continuing forward. So I think that's a really big consideration for us. I also am worried that a bigger rate rise could result in more applications to our hardship program, which is not ideal for us as council. And I don't think we should be having to put more people in the position where they have to apply to that. I also want to note that we haven't yet looked at our long-term financial plan, so I think that that's really important for us when we're talking about sustainability. I don't think we can look at 1 year and say that this makes us sustainable. So I won't be supporting the motion as it's been put.
Thank you, Councillor Pasquale.
Thank you, through you, Acting Mayor. I too won't be supporting this. I accept that Councillor Herman forgot to include me on the email today, but that's in the past. I just struggle with the rationale around dropping back 1% next year, because I don't think we're in an environment in which we can guarantee that we would be able to do that. There are circumstances that are beyond our control that we keep coming up against. And I am not convinced that we've actually looked at all of the excessive spending within the council to warrant a higher rate rise. I think the question on notice is kind of one area that highlights, you know, where we need to be a bit more diligent. And I agree that a surplus does mean that we're not necessarily delivering all of the services we need to. And I don't feel comfortable with this without seeing more scrutiny over the figures as to, you know, where are we going to make some savings? And I do struggle with the idea that, oh, it's only $16 more per household. You know, those kinds of rationales, we don't know what people are experiencing in our communities right now for us to make those kind of statements. I remember last year when we had this debate, it was bandied around, oh, it's just a cup of coffee. Well, you know, I'm an almond milk latte and I can pay up to $8 for one of those. So, I also agree that we don't have a strategic plan and a long-term financial plan in which I would feel comfortable looking at all of this and saying, yes, I agree with that. So I won't be supporting this version.
Councillor Lunch.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Likewise, I have issues with this particular figure. As has already been mentioned, the difference on average is $16 per annum. However, for some people, it will be significantly more because of things like their increase in valuation of their properties. So it's that $16 is only average value. And admittedly, for some people, it will be less than that as well. So it is significant for some people. We are in a cost of living crisis. And I actually reject the idea that increasing rates is the hard decision. Actually, cutting costs is the hard decision, not increasing rates. Increasing rates is the easy thing to do. I also have an issue with this slavish idea that we have to get exactly within that band of 1-5% every year. Back when we did have this argument, this discussion about what those targets should be, it was very clear, and it still remains the LGA recommendation that the operating surplus range is recommended by the LGA to be between 0-10% averaged over time. So I don't think we should be slavishly following recommendations that we've set ourselves for targets and essentially making our ratepayers pay more because of it. And I guess that the other final thing I guess that I have a little bit of an issue with is we're sort of saying this is an extraordinary situation. I don't actually think it's that extraordinary. I think the extraordinary situations are the natural disasters and the big storms and the COVIDs of the time. This is an increase in 500 kg in the depreciation, additional spending of 500 k on the Angular bikeway stage 4, and a new customer request management system. These are sort of, you know, normal pressures on the budget. It's not an extraordinary. So I don't think we should be using that to justify additional rate rises. So from that perspective, I will oppose this motion, and I would be more comfortable with the original staff recommendation.
Councillor Cheetham.
Thank you, Acton. I guess the practice is that I'm not supporting this motion at this juncture in time. I want to rehash my support's being said by Councillor Selwood and Knight and Ascali on this, but I agree with many of the statements in there and considerations. You know, when setting rates, you have to have your filtering yourself for your purpose of your rate setting, whether it can increase, decrease, or maintain. And it's got to serve the community in the best way possible. Now, we talk about cost of living crisis, and this comes down to cash flow. And rates are quite highly impactful cash flow piece on our ratepayers. It's that thinking of that if your property is of high value, then you may have a higher dollar to pay for that rate increase, doesn't take into account cash flow. People may have properties that are held in families for long periods of time, farming lands, and they all add these pressures. And I really want to, I guess, repeat that point of that sustainability is a long-term consideration, not a window in time. This particular budget that we're setting is at a window in time. And I think it is responsible for us when the public sentiment is around real financial challenges, I don't think the burden of risk mitigation for us as a council should fall to the residents. We do have borrowing capacity. It is a risk. We are not looking at moving into a position like to be financially unsustainable. And I would probably say, using some of the feedback from the disclosure report that we received, that going for a rate rise, which is proposed as option one, would be well received and acceptable and reasonable. So I have issue with, I guess, putting the burden of expectation around sustainability and an arbitrary target, and I absolutely agree with Councillor Grant. We've discussed that at a later time. But at this moment in time, with this particular budget, I don't think it's a reasonable increase to be considered.
Thank you, Councillor Cheetham.
No, me.
Little lady to ponder. Councillor Hamm, if you'd like to write up the
file. Yes, thank you for the debate around the table. Just a few of the points that I've picked up. First of all, this is a draft. There's the word budget. It's only a draft budget, which is to go out to public consultation to make that point very clear. The issue of cutting costs, I agree with that. We've just been through a budget review too, where the CEO managed to scrape up some savings to save us from going into deficit this current year. Because when it came to the audit committee, there was a deficit being shown, and the audit committee resolved to ask the CEO to get the budget back into surplus by the end of June. He moved heaven and earth, and the report came to the council a week later. Have the budget back into the surplus. Very good. Cash flow, we'll experience that. We know what it's all about. There is, and so I think Councillor March mentioned, there is programs where if there is hardship, the council can meet most of the, or all of the requirements for genuine hardship.
I'm not aware of anyone being foreclosed because they didn't pay their rates because they didn't have the money. Now, I think the other issue, we don't have a LTFP and we don't have a strategic plan. I agree with that. We should have one. We don't. So that's the facts of life. The service review that has been banding around, CEO is going to undertake that, or we, the CEO, will undertake that next year. That's a key element. And the service review may well reveal there are some inefficiencies, there are cost savings that could be made. However, I hasten to add that any other time where a council's been asked to cut a service or do something like that, they haven't got the, I was going to say something, but they haven't got the courage, that's the word, haven't got the courage to reduce or stop the service. Very rarely does that. So I believe that this is an outcome to go out to the public. The public will soon tell us if they don't like it. We can tell you that now. Based on other history that we've had, the complaints about rate increases, particularly last 6% or something, I think from memory is about 2 or 3. That's not a big concern, but however, having a 6% roughly last year and another one this year, 2 in a row, that may well contract a bit of interest in the council, so financial stability. My motion is for the council, not individuals. So I think what we've got up there is the best fit that meets the needs of our communities, and we encourage you to support us.
Thank you. Debate closed. All those in favour, please indicate. Those against, the motion lost. Would someone like to move something? Councillor Mudge.
Yes, can I move the original recommendations?
Yes, you'd like to speak to the motion.
Look, I think we've probably said all that needs to be said. I think it's a sort of a sensible compromise. I don't think we should be slavish or following in targets to get an extra 0.5%. And there's been a lot of discussion in workshops leading up to this debate here. And I think this is a sensible compromise that will be likely to be reasonably acceptable for our community. So I can move my motion.
Councillor Searle was first.
Yeah, I'm happy to second. Thank you.
Anyone else like to speak to the motion? No, with all those here, with debate closed, all those in favour, please indicate. Those against, that is carried. Okay, so I'll just speak briefly now that the motion's passed. I personally, if it comes to a casting vote, I would have supported the motion to pass. The reasons being that, one, it was alluded to around the long-term average and trend over time. I think the motion or recommendation that came to us did provide a degree of surplus to accommodate the discussions that were had at the workshop. But we also need to be very mindful of, I guess, how much we do raise rates. And the second is, I reflected on what Councillor Herman talked about with Sampson Flat, and it is true, we did have rates which were 1% above what was, I guess, scheduled in the long-term financial plan, and we then removed it the following year. But that was a conversation that we had over a significant period of time through workshops, discussions, and made that commitment to the community when we went out to consultation. That was part of our messaging. Whereas in this instance, it's something that's just come up this evening. And I think that if we're going to go down that path, we would need to actually have had that broader conversation earlier in the piece. Okay, we will move on to item 12.2. So that is the status report, council resolutions update. Ms. Gill, do you have any new or additional information to provide the chamber?
No.
Would someone like to move something in relation to this item? Councillor Grant?
Yeah.
The seconder, Councillor Nudge. Anyone like to speak to the motion? All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. Move on to item 12.3, which has 11 decisions that we will contemplate individually, just noting they are essentially extensions of confidentiality periods. And if there were questions relating to the item itself, we would need to go into confidence But otherwise, I encourage you just to ask those questions by email, unless it will affect your decision. So the first one, decision one, would someone like to move something in relation to that? Councillor Munch, is that as printed?
Yes.
Someone like to second it? Councillor Grant, all those in favour, please indicate. Second, you in favour? Councillor Hammond?
No.
Harry, unanimously, still the role we got there. Okay, so decision two is CEO performance review process. Someone like to move something, it's Councillor Grant. Move and seconder, Councillor Cheetah. In debate, all those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. So moving on to item or decision three, I should say, the Amy Gillett Bikeway Stage 4. Someone like to move. As printed, Councillor Hammond?
Yes.
And the seconder, Councillor Grant. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. Moving on to decision four, Country Cabinet, August 2023 Key Strategic Issues. Would someone like to move something in relation to that item? Councillor Cheetah. So as printed. Councillor Grant to second. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. Decision by the ministerial exemption. Someone like to move something in relation to that one. Councillor Pascali, turned it up a bit. Can we second there? So as printed, I assume. As printed?
Oh, yes, sorry.
No, I just Councillor Marsh to second. And all those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. And we have decision six, the revised East Ways 22-23 annual budget. Councillor Boyd, you'd like to move as printed?
Yes.
And the seconder, Councillor Selwood. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. Decision seven, East Ways recycling contract. Councillor Boyd, you'd like to move as printed?
Yeah.
And the seconder, Councillor Grant. All those in favour, please indicate. Is carried unanimously. Decision eight, Ashton Landfill. Someone like to move something? Councillor Chair has printed.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Second deck. And what a second, Councillor Grant. Please interrupt my lines. Yeah, carried unanimously. All right, so three to go. Decision nine, Warren Road.
Yes, that's
printed. Yes, ma'am. Councillor Munch, and all those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. Decision 10, the electricity procurement legal matter. Councillor Grant to move as printed. Councillor Cheetah to second. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. Decision 11, Ashton Landfield.
Yep.
Councillor Boyd, and Councillor Cheetah, so that says printed. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. All right, so moving on to item 13, which are information items. We have one item in relation to Curtinbrook Cemetery and the Natural Burial Ground updates. Do we have, if you'd like to move the motion as printed?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and would you like to speak with it at all?
No, I didn't think that one, so great.
Councillor Cheetah to second. If anyone likes to speak to the item, no. I will debate close. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. Okay, we do have some correspondence for noting. So we have separate motions for each of those going.
Sure.
Okay, so we're just moving to the correspondence that received and noted. So the first one being GRFMA Notice of Dispute and Response. Yeah. Councillor Mudge, you're happy to move that way?
I actually have a question. Sure. One, if that's okay.
Yeah.
In the response from the Taller River Floodplain Management Authority, it mentions this is the response regarding the dispute process. It mentions that if the parties can't come to an agreement, then the dispute shall be referred to an expert for determination. My question is, how likely is it that we won't be able to come to some sort of a determination, like an agreement? And what would we do if that determination is unfavourable to us?
Thank you for hypothesizing into a crystal ball. We don't know. I haven't had to answer that in the sense until that conversation is had. I mean, it's obviously in relation to the 9 acceptance of the budget, and they may choose to revise their budget and put it to us in a different way that we're willing to accept. So I think until that conversation takes place, it would be hard to hypothesize as to what would happen about a determination.
Further question. Could I just add something? There is another council that is also...
Yes, Light Region.
Yeah, Light Regional Council is also...
going through the same process.
Going through the same
process. That would be the same.
Whoever speaks.
Yes, well, they did not accept the budget either. So it's noting that the dispute is in relation to the budget itself, not our review of just his membership of that authority. Would you like to receive? So as printed on the screen. Thanks. And so I'd like to second that, Councillor Grant. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. So we'll move on to 14.2, which is the appointment of the chairperson for GRFMA. So I'd like to move that we receive a note to that correspondence. Councillor Herman. Councillor Hoy to second. All those in favour, please indicate. That is carried unanimously. And the last one would pass. From Daisy Caramanis, which I saw a great photo of them in the paper last week. It was really nice to see. So, Councillor Sedwood, you're happy to emerge as a printer on the screen. And Councillor Cheever to second. all those in favour, please indicate. That is Caramanis. All right, do we have any questions without notice? Yes, Councillor Sedwood.
Sorry, I just thought about it. I did see a press release that came from the state government, the Minister for Planning the other day, saying that he was giving $600,000 to councils for heritage code amendments, and there were 6 councils listed, not ours. And I was just wondering if we were aware of that and whether we can look at it in the future.
Do we have a response? Good questions. any other questions without notice? You have any motions without notice? Councillor Herman?
I have one.
I haven't.
I'll see if you'll accept it.
We'll see. What's your
question? You might have a conflict, though. I move that the council acknowledges the professional manner in which Councillor Daniel...
I'd actually prefer the motion not to look at it. I'll explain why. I know it's been an unusual circumstance and me being in this role for a long time, and I really appreciate you want to acknowledge that, but I think we all play a role for this organisation, and I don't think I should be thanked any more than anyone else like yourself. I do really appreciate that. Okay, moving on to item 17.1, council member production or activity on business of council. I did circulate mine to my own questions because I've heard of anything. 17.2, no other. Yes, Councillor Scully, you'd like to.
Sorry, I thought I'd sent through.
That's okay. You can add it then.
Get the diary out. We've had 2 Woodford Residents Association meetings, and one was last night, and the other, was in April. And I just wanted to, I attended those as a resident, but I wanted to put them in the minutes because it's quite historic. We finally have a Woodford Residents Association after all of these years, and We started off with about six of us on the first date, and last night we doubled our numbers and we reached our membership fee, so we can now formally go ahead and become an association. And I think moving forward, when we talk about boundary reform stuff, this is actually really quite significant. And the other was actually, and I will send this through if that's okay, but it was a meeting with a resident in Hamilton Hill. And there are residents on Lewis Wharf there who have a series of problems that we need to really address. So I will send those exact details of that person's name through to them.
Thank you. CEO, do you have anything about that in addition to Country Cabinet?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about what I've been up to, but I would like to give an update on, I guess, the current recruitment. So we conducted interviews earlier this week for the Director of Corporate Services, hoping to finalise that process and have the third candidate by early this time next week. So yeah, watch the space. We've gone out for an expression of interest for the Director of Community and Development, an internal expression of interest. We've had a few people put a submission into that, so I'll roll that out in due course as well and give the suitably skilled people an opportunity to act in that role while we go out formally to recruit for the Director of Community Development. Other recruits, I guess we're looking at human resources and looking at a strategic approach and getting someone with a high strategy regarding organisational development and human resources, which will help augment the executive team and also help smooth out, I guess, the change process. So looking at doing that and reporting back to this council at the appropriate time. Another one, I did check in with Lauren Warwick Mitiger from Leighton's group, who is building the Woolworth site across the road. They are on track. They are still drafting up plans and working with the natural terrain of the Sterling Main Street to accommodate all the usual expectations of residents and patrons, so parking and a good facility for shopping. So I thought I'd just give you a quick update on those matters, and I'm open to any questions about the councillors.
Just a quick question when you were meeting with Warren Mitiger. Did he give any indication of, because it's my understanding they'll knock down the remaining part of the building, did he give any indication as to when that will occur?
Not a time frame, but it will occur. You can reassure that it will be a completely level site.
Okay. Do anyone have any questions for the CEO? Councillor Bunch.
Yeah, just in relation to that, did you give any indication of when plans might be developed or planning on doing?
So it's a good question. What I'd like to do is make sure that it works with council and community on this. So there'll be a series of opportunities over the next few weeks, I'm hoping, to come in and meet with council in the first instance, that's council administration, to make sure that they do get it right and the development is in keeping with the expectations of council and is sympathetic to the Sterling Ministry.
Thank you. You have a question, Councillor?
I'm back to Amy Gillard. Any contracts signed or close to being signed?
It's a very good question. You know,
is it just very good?
Had a conversation. Yeah, absolutely. Very close. Yeah, so we just, as you'd appreciate these contracts, the devil's in the detail. But we are out there doing some, I guess, survey work, preliminary survey work as we speak.
Thank you. I'll ask that next to you.
I know it'll be to Councillor Hammond. You have to ask some questions.
Oh, I'm sorry, and just one that's remiss of me. She's in the room as well. So, Sky Ludsway. Now, yes, I did pronounce that correctly. She has assumed the role. She's it's a secondment position as our governance officer, working very closely with Zoe and also Rebecca on delivering our agendas, reviewing policies, and so she's with us in a secondment role for about 6 months. So yes.
Welcome.
We do not have staff.
No, it's good to see you.
All right, so we will move on. There are no reports from any committees. So we're now at confidential items and bid public gallery go well. Thank you for coming along tonight. We appreciate it. To moving into conference, Councillor Grant has mentioned in the agenda. We have a seconder, Councillor Sheeter. So, all in favour to go into conference. That is carried unanimously. We are now in conference.